Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My guest today is Mark Cuff. Mark is the founder and owner of The Living Vine, which is based in Toronto. What is The Living Vine and why did you give your company that name?
The Living Vine is a wine agency that represents imports organic, biodynamic, and natural wines exclusively since around 2004. No, that's actually a lie. 2005. I had to think about it for a second.
We'll get the lawyers to check that.
There's
a team of three of them. Yeah. We like to be accurate on this show.
Yeah, mainly with a focus on biodynamic wines. I was a sommelier in my 20s, working in restaurants and hotels in Toronto, and I developed a real interest in biodynamic winemaking, and we didn't see a lot of these wines in our market. We definitely didn't see a lot of agents or importers, as we're known as agents in Ontario versus importers, marketing biodynamic, organic, and sort of natural wines. And I'd read a couple books. One was actually yours.
Checks in the post.
And which, in your book on biodynamic wines was a reference point for me to, reach out to and research all of these wineries that just weren't in our market. And Ontario can be a challenging market to import wine in compared to other markets. As I was reaching out to all these other wineries to find out where could I buy them, where could I get them, more information, they weren't represented, they weren't in our market, and I saw an opportunity to start a different business that I really knew nothing about, other than the guys that would knock on my door and try and sell me Pinot Grigio and Napa Cabernet. So that's how the business started.
Do you have a background? Have you got a business degree?
No, I barely graduated high school.
Really?
Yeah.
So that was just laziness and boredom rather than, the fact that, you got a brain.
Yeah, I think, my goal was always, I wanted to open my own restaurant. I loved hospitality. I loved restaurants.
So the sommelier thing for you was a way to get into that world, was that right?
Yes, yeah. So I was very young. I was like 24, 25 years old. It's difficult to get a job managing in a good restaurant in Toronto at the time without a lot of experience, which I didn't have, and getting a sommelier diploma got me into a suit basically the day after I graduated. And becoming a sommelier my goal wasn't to be a sommelier, the goal was to develop a skill set that would enable me to open a really cool restaurant, wine bar in Toronto. And I had saved up some money to do that, and sort of at the last minute I decided to shift and import wine instead, with a focus on biodynamic growers.
Right, so did you start off with France and then gravitate to Italy?
Ooh. Our first winery, funny enough, was Nicolas Joly.
He was a famous biodynamic producer in the Loire Valley.
Yeah, and a hero and inspiration to many people. And, they're a serious winery. They do really amazing things. I think some people don't get it, and those people probably never will. The people that do, I think, really appreciate the effort and enthusiasm that he puts into
He is Mr. Biodynamic, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And rightfully so, and I think there's a lot of credit owed to him developing that category, especially with the Renaissance des Appellations tour and shows that they do. And it's a group of growers that are all grow biodynamically that travel and sort of do off-tastings around larger shows to promote biodynamic growing.
And they have Italian members as well. It used to be just
many,
French, but yeah.
Many, yeah. I mean, French, it's probably still, more French people, but definitely a lot more Italians.
So what are people doing? I mean, now what is on trend in terms of, obviously you only deal with this particular category, the organic, biodynamic, and natural. Italy has a very strong and well-organized, I should say, natural wine movement. I think it's ahead of actually the biodynamic movement in Italy. Van Natura is a body based in the north of Italy, and all their members have all their wines analyzed as a group so that there are no people in charge can check that there are no residues and stuff like that in the wine, which is very sort of clear thinking from the organizers there, because sometimes you can get people with natural wine that say that they're natural and there's no real control. So that's why Italy's number one. Are you focusing on that as well in terms of selection of wines, the natural in Italy or the biodynamic or the organic, or is it just anything?
Yeah, I mean, we've always been a premium focused agency, so it's quality first. To drink wine because it's organic as an excuse is ridiculous. It has to taste good. It has to be excellent. Farming has to be great. Our main focus still is biodynamic wines. We have a lot of our biodynamic growers are making natural wines because they also buy into it and believe in it as well. They want to make wines that are healthier and more vital, provided they can also express terroir and style and all those other things. The natural wine movement's really interesting. It's taken off in a faster you know, more intense way than, say, organic or biodynamics did. I don't sort of see either category as really niche anymore, just another category, because there's so many wineries, there's so many shows, there's so much being imported and distributed now, even in Toronto, that tends to be a couple years behind other larger, more mature markets, for new things.
What is that then?
I mean, Ontario has some of the strictest quality assurance regulations on the planet. And I mean, you can be sure that if you're drinking a bottle of wine, no matter how it's grown or made, that it's below all the legal thresholds for any additives and things like that.
So one of the problems with that system, and you and I have discussed this before, but, you know, for example, if somebody, I have a biodynamic vineyard in Italy, and my granddad farmed it in the 60s and used, for example, an arsenic-based spray, that residue will still turn up in my wine, or can still turn up. So when I go to the Canadian Monopoly, Mark wants to import my wine, and they analyze it, say, hang on, it looks like Monty's using arsenic. And you think, you know, Monty hasn't used arsenic. It was his granddad that did it. How do you get around that? And what is the frustration for you when that sort of thing happens, the mechanics of getting the wine in?
Well, you can't really get around anything that's poisonous or toxic. So the wine either has to be returned or destroyed. And there's two ways to look at it. You could say, well, you know, are these thresholds designed for daily consumption? Like if I have a glass of like a fruit liqueur that has a high level of ethyl carbonate, which I might have at Christmas or at Easter or when family's over once, it's very different than consuming a glass of orange juice every morning with my breakfast containing 600 parts per million of ethyl carbonate or something like that. You know what I mean? So that's one way to look at it. And you could almost make that argument. But in another way, I think that anyone that's growing organically, biodynamically, or naturally, I think has the environment in mind and they don't want arsenic in their wines. And I think they would be disturbed to find out that it was there. I doubt that they would feel good about it. We're starting to see copper pop up a lot in biodynamic growing, and it's used in the vineyard, and it's also used in the cellar as sort of a last resort to maybe fix reduction.
Yeah, I mean, that, for me, that's just bad winemaking. You know, you shouldn't have any need to use copper in the wine. Basically, copper, if a wine smells a bit eggy, normally red wines, you can just get rid of that with racking, just aerating the wine. You shouldn't be using copper. I really don't think it should be allowed. Copper sulfite takes the eggy smell away.
But I think it's so widely accepted because it's a naturally occurring element that I think sometimes maybe newer growers are a little heavy-handed with it and it shows up, or maybe you're just, you know, wherever the bottle's coming from the tank, there's some residue. But again, Ontario is one of the few markets in the world that even test for that.
Yeah.
So I understand some other markets are looking to start to test for it, but because Ontario has such a sophisticated lab, they have one of the best in the world for testing alcohol. I mean, the people from all over the world ship their wines there to have certain tests done. Like they can't get done at any ISO lab in Europe. So it's almost too good. So, you know, especially when we're focused on bringing in wines that literally fail lab every time they arrive because of an organic certificate, you know, maybe labeling requirements, or maybe the volatile acidity is a little high, and we, you know, there's things like that. Although volatile acidity isn't poisonous or toxic,
exactly.
Maybe you can, you know, maybe there could be some small exceptions made, but anyways, that's the world I live in. So
what about the market? What is hot at the moment in Toronto?
I think everything's hot in Toronto right now, to be honest. Toronto has never had a more vibrant restaurant scene. Quality is at a place I never would have imagined Toronto restaurants reaching even 10 to 15 years ago. There are always a few really good restaurants wherever you go in the world, but there's...
So what are people drinking there? What are they screaming out for?
So I think, less regional food from around the world is really common. More popular now. It's not just steakhouses, that sort of thing. Veg focus. There's more of a focus on vegetables.
Yeah.
Lighter fare, healthier eating.
And wine-wise?
And so wine-wise, stylistically, we're seeing restaurants buy more medium-bodied reds versus oaky, heavier alcoholic wines that aren't food-friendly. Quite frankly, Austrian wines, there's definitely a big increase on stuff like that.
Number one on the planet for the quality of its biodynamic wine growing by far and away.
We're seeing a lot more interest in that. But I mean, Italy, I mean, listen, Toronto might be half Italian. I don't know. There's a lot of Italians in Toronto, a lot of Italian restaurants, and we love Italian wine. It has to be one of the biggest markets for Italian wines on the planet. Everything sells well there. Provided you have a good agent that you know can get it into the market either privately or through the monopoly.
What are your biggest sellers? What are the wines that you sell from Italy that are the quickest movers?
Oh, for us, we sell a lot of wine from like Ariano Capinti, Cos, from Sicily. Sicilian wines are really
on trend.
Really on trend right now. There's just a
Prosecco,
yeah, for sure. Fedora Prosecco, we sell a lot of, and their Pinot Grigio. They're a great organic grower. It's a 74. They're one of the oldest organic growers in Italy. Fuori d'Ori, women winemakers, I I think Elisabetta is like a real inspiration to a lot of women in our industry, and I think we're seeing more and more women psalms, restaurateurs,
and things like that as
winemakers.
Well. Stella di Campalto and Brunello.
Yeah, 100%. Beautiful wines. Salicuti. I mean, it's like legendary stuff. You know, there's some really, really great wines coming into our market, and these wines were almost impossible to sell 10 years ago. Because we just wanted oak, alcohol, Parker points. If it didn't have 95 points, you couldn't sell it. I mean, when I was buying wine, most wine lists in the city had like two Pinot Grigios and two different Shirazes, one from Barossa, one from McLaren Vale, and you know, Napa Cabs and Merlot. And it's really changed. And especially with the Vinitaly Ambassador Program that they do, they're bringing over lots of new and older and you know, veteran Psalms. To come over and study and learn about Italian wine.
So they can then communicate about these native grape varieties, et cetera.
Yeah, I think Ontario, Toronto's sommeliers, for the most part, I think, understand Italian wines, I think, better than maybe most countries. I mean, we all have our favorites and we love it, but I mean, they can really go deep now with obscure varietals, local varietals, indigenous grapes, winemaking techniques. They know the people, they've met them. I think Ian DeGatta has done a great job with that, and I don't even think I could pass the program, but I see every time I come here in the last couple of years, I see, you know, 20, 30 of our customers with pins and stuff. And
so that's a little
badge
you get when you pass the course.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I recommend anyone to do that if they can. It seems like a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I mean, Italy's often criticized for not being very joined up, right? And to fly opinion formers, influencers, SOMs, journalists, whatever, importers over from a foreign country, citizen, we know Italian wine is complicated. We're going to help guide you through it by educating you about the native grape varieties that we have and what they taste like, where they're grown and how they're grown and how they're made. It is pretty joined up and it's a fantastic program, so long may it continue.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think it's made a huge difference, and it's also nice to see, like, not just importers and consumers walking around. It's nice to see the people that are the filter for everyone's hard work to consumers to come here and really take it's a gift, I think. For most of them to take back to their businesses and restaurants. So
cool.
Yeah.
It's a nice way to finish this. Nice to get someone that comes on the podcast is actually not talking about himself or his own company, is talking about something else than himself. Well, that's right. I've known you for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of guy you are. And that's why we like you.
Oh, thanks, Monty.
It's just really because you just plugged my book, which is now out of date and out of print, or should be.
Oh, there's a new version, isn't there? Didn't you update
it? Yeah, new one. We're not going to talk about that. I didn't talk about books anyway. Yeah. But the other one is very old. But anyway.
I just want a digital copy at some point.
We know I'm not biodynamics and digital. We're just not really kind of bedfellows.
I know.
I knocked my first book out with a chisel and a stone. And I'm just, I can use a pen now, which is quite
It definitely
cool.
Took you a while to do it. That's what we all thought was the process.
I've only got my first mobile phone about the last couple of years.
I know,
so that's pretty amazing.
It's Nokia or something.
Yeah. I used to send carrier pigeons. So I don't even know how this recording equipment works, really. There's a few little red lights on this little machine I'm using. So anyway, I just want to say thank you to my guest today, Mark Cuff, who is CEO and founder of The Living Vine, which is a super-duper importer of green, organic, natural, and biodynamic wines.
Thanks, Monty. It's been a lifelong dream of mine to be on a podcast, so this means a lot to me to be here. And
it won't happen again.
I probably won't be invited back.
You only got one shot, mate, at this.
I know.
So exclusive.
But you know what? It's in the bag. What can I say?
Yeah, I mean, it would need severe editing normally to get my boring voice out of it and listen to you a little bit more. But it's been a great pleasure. Yeah. I'm not being disingenuous, you know me. Thank you very much to my guest today, Mark Cuff.
You're welcome. And good luck with the series. I love it. I listen to it all the time.
Thanks.
And,
you don't have to say things
like
that.
No, it's true. Everyone listens to it back home. I think we're all big fans of this. It's nice to have more stuff like this. It's wonderful. Thank you.
This is the fourth time I'm going to try and do the outro to this particular episode of the Italian Wine Podcast. My guest today was Mark Cuff. Mark, the door is over there, mate. just take a right and don't turn around. Who is chairman and founder, CEO, chief executive officer, financial wizard, whatever it is, linguist, wine lover, importer. The Living Vine, based in Toronto, that specializes in weirdy, beardy wines.
Yeah, and we have a great Instagram account. The Living Vine.
Yeah, give me the Twitter handle.
Yeah, at The Living Vine.
Yeah, Facebook.
At The Living Vine.
Instagram.
At The Living Vine.
What other ones are there?
That's it. I guess that's all they are.
LinkedIn?
LinkedIn. I don't know. It's probably just Mark Cuff.
You were quite impressed. I knew all these things, didn't you?
What's that?
Well, at least I know the names of these social media.
I'm impressed. Yeah, no. I'm impressed you have the headphones on. I mean, this is...
They don't work.
They don't know?
No, they look great.
They're just a prop.
Yeah. Photos. Yeah, we've got a glass. We're in this glass studio, so they've taken photos outside. So I look like I know what I'm doing. I've got a pen in my hand. I've got a laptop, which doesn't work. It's not on. You can see it's not on, is it?
Well, it's great to see you, and you definitely look like you know what you're doing. So appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. So what we need to do next time is maybe do a podcast where the outro isn't actually longer than the podcast itself.
Yeah, sure.
A little bit out of balance,
I would have. I have a very hard time saying goodbye. I think that's it's yeah. more my.
I never would have guessed.
My own minor issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Might want to work on that. Should we do it? Say goodbye.
Goodbye. Thanks.
Goodbye, Mark.
Ciao.
Thanks a lot.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.